this isn't just about horsepower.
It's about the culture behind the wheel.
From the latest automotive headlines,
to the machines we love, to the music, movies, and moments driving in the lifestyle.
This is Driveline with Justin Basic. If it's got an engine, an attitude, or a story worth telling, we're on it. Call in. Leave your take. 833-3DL-SHOW. This is Driveline. So let's strap in and let's roll.
Dark Eyes. It's a bit of a late show this week, but I've been on the road for a plane and battling a little post-nasal drip too. This is Driveline, sort of car show is what I'm calling it now. We talk about a lot of things, but it always comes back to cars in some way, shape, or form. Lots of updates this week. Ward Kimball's house just closed on Tuesday. It sold for asking price. Spike Ferriston and Zuckerman sold their Zagato, price not disclosed. The 1996 Caprice is back. I went on a trip somewhere new for the past week, and LAFD Holland Heroes is back. So, big question. Where was I this week?
To Hawaii. The most sought-after postal route of them all. The air is so dewy sweet, you don't even have to lick the stamps.
Now, I'll admit I never wanted to go to Hawaii. I'm trying to visit all 50 states. I've added a big number to the list in the last 10 years or so, but Hawaii always seemed like it would be the one that wouldn't happen. Either because of the cost, or I'm afraid of the long plane ride, and it didn't feel like my vibe, so I was always going to go there last. But my girlfriend wanted to go for a long time, so we went for her birthday last week. Now, if you've never been to Hawaii, something that's kind of you don't expect is, despite being part of the United States, and it's only been part of the United States for 70 years or so, it feels like you're in a foreign country, particularly Japan or that other region of Eastern Asia. And they have things like stores we don't have. A notable one being this Japanese store called Don Quixote. So, what is Don Quixote? It feels kind of like a Kmart. It's a discount store, but pretty cool place. From their website, Don Quixote provides everything from household goods to brand name products, as well as exciting and thrilling experiences. The group operates more than 630 stores around the world, serving customers both internationally and domestically in Japan. We have an overwhelming array of products from toilet paper to high-end brand products. This is translated. We're very pleased with the support of our customers both in Japan and overseas for our store's presentation, which gives the feeling of thrill and excitement as if you've just wandered into a jungle. So they got this jingle that plays, and it's a pretty big earworm. But the whole time I was there, this is all that was playing in my head. Old K-Rock throwback. Magazine 60. But yeah, Don Quixote, they have three stores in Hawaii. They had all kinds of snacks from Japan. I bought these potato sticks that look like In-N-Out fries, and then some kimchi-flavored tempura seaweed that was really good. Cool store. Other reasons Hawaii kind of feels like a foreign country. People take scooters everywhere. I mean, especially where we stayed in Waikiki, the streets are just littered with scooters parked everywhere. And the funny thing, too, is I've been in California a while, and everyone here kind of follows the helmet laws. No one in Hawaii wears helmets. Also, tons and tons of JDM cars in Hawaii. I saw a lot of K-vans, Hondas, Subarus, but also a Toyota Prado parked in an apartment complex, and a Toyota Crown Wagon that I didn't get a picture of, that was waiting at the railroad crossing. So yeah, railroad crossing. They have a train ride, too. Let's go back to LA for a second. So, I like to stop by Travel Town in Griffith Park. It's a good little place to stop and eat lunch or just hide. And months ago, I saw the Oahu Railway cars there, and knowing I was going to the island, I looked into the history of it a bit. So it turns out, what's left of that railway still has a functioning train ride you can take for about 13 miles. Now, it's a great little place. It's off to the east western side of the island, in farmland and stuff, very rural area. There's some resorts and stuff out there. They have a nice little outfit. It's like a mini train museum. You can kind of wander the grounds. The grounds, I believe, are free if you don't ride the train. And on Saturdays for a few hours, they have a model train display. But really good little train ride. I highly recommend it. And the announcer on there, I swear they came from Disneyland because it reminded me of one of my favorite rides.
If anybody is thinking of the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Actually, I was thinking this sounds a lot more like the Jungle Cruise.
You guys are correct. Disney's Aulani was originally going to keep the boat here on dry dock display for their attractions. However, they very quickly found out that leaving a wooden boat on the coastal shores of Oahu was not good idea for maintenance or upkeep. And so Disney wound up taking the boat back to the mainland.
Another little interesting tidbit I learned while on this train ride is that the Hawaiian chakra sign with the thumb and pinky finger exposed, that comes from the railroads. They say the most likely origin comes from a man named Hamana Kalili, and he lost three middle fingers on his right hand while working at the Kahuhu sugar mill. So Kalili, after he lost, he couldn't work at the sugar mill anymore, they made him guard the sugar train. So he had this all-clear wave, and all he had left of his hand was his thumb and pinky. And it's said to have evolved into the chakra when kids who were hopping on the trains flashed each other the chakra to mimic the guard's hand and warn each other he was coming. On the way back from the train ride, we stopped at the Pearl Ridge Mall, where they were having a kind of a cruise night. And it was really cool to be immersed in the Hawaiian car culture, which is very big there, happy to say. It's kind of like LA. There's a lot of Volkswagens, buses, Beetles. My favorites from the show, there was a pair of Nashes. There was a 55 Rambler and an Ambassador together with like original Hawaiian stickers. That was really cool. Also car related, I stopped by Moon Eyes Hawaii. It's a small little second story store. They got a lot of memorabilia on display. A little selection of hot rod accessories you can buy, and great apparel and souvenirs. It's a lot more tied to Moon Eyes Japan than the Santa Fe Springs outfit. I bought myself two shirts because I couldn't decide which one I wanted. Also stopped by, I had to go to McDonald's. Because I remembered a long time ago, McDonald's' menu there is a little different than normal. The main thing is, they still have fried apple pies. Every pie in the continental U.S. is baked now, but the pies are fried in Hawaii. They also have taro and coconut pies, but they were out of stock when I was there. I just noticed they're back now, so a little disappointed there. They offer Spam and Portuguese sausage options for breakfast. And they have a burger we don't get called the McTerry Deluxe, which is... it's just a simple burger, but it's covered in teriyaki sauce, and it's got lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. Got one of those. Really, really good. The 7-Eleven stores there, too, they're branded as Hawaiian, and they're a lot more tied to the Asian palate than Americans. I got a special, it was almost like a pina colada flavored Slurpee there that was Hawaiian exclusive. And then we rented a car to drive up to the North Shore one day, and I gotta say, the latest Chevy Malibu is bad. I don't know if it's just the base model engine this one had, but it made my Volt seem really, really good, and I kind of missed it after driving this car. I want to like Chevy so bad, but man, this car could not get out of its own way. But we drove up to the North Shore, really nice. We had some great shaved ice up there. Visited a few more souvenir shops. Walked on the beach. Saw a sea turtle, which was exciting. And the last day we were there, I finally swam in the ocean for the first time. All these years living in California, never wanted to swim in the ocean, but the ocean water there is like a pool, so very, very good swimming conditions. So, but yeah, I haven't stopped talking about Hawaii since I've been back.
Ananakuli makawani yani ona nanalulawa Hawaii.
Yeah. So, I am happy my rental car experience in Hawaii didn't end like this couple's. Enterprise tried pinning bogus $7,000 bill on renters for gas-diesel mix-up, finally forced to back down. So, this is from The Drive. Paper receipts seem a bit quaint in the digital age. Even wallets are made out of ones and zeros these days. But sometimes a receipt is worth a heck of a lot more than the paper it's printed on, as one Canadian couple found out when Enterprise, the same company I rented my car from, sent them a bill for nearly $10,000 Canadian after returning their rental car. The claim? They filled their car with diesel rather than gasoline before returning it. The couple from British Columbia rented a Dodge Durango last April from National, an Enterprise brand. Didn't know that. Before returning it to Edmonton International Airport, they stopped to fuel it up, added 48 liters of gasoline, and dropped it off without incident. A week later, they were contacted by Enterprise to inform them that their rental had been filled with diesel rather than gasoline, and that because they were in possession of the vehicle when it allegedly happened, they owed Enterprise $9,500 Canadian dollars to cover the cost of repair. Filling up a gasoline car with diesel fuel rarely results in serious damage. If the mistake is discovered right away, it's usually a matter of just draining the fuel tank and perhaps replacing the fuel filter and pump. But if the diesel is ingested further into the car's fuel system or engine, everything has to be purged of any residual fuel. That can get expensive, and evidently Enterprise wanted to stick the customer with the bill. But, sure enough, they had the receipt. Receipts, in fact. And apparently, the fuel pump shut off prematurely the first time around, forcing them to top it off. And the detailed receipts showed not only the time and date of the fill, but the fact that they had selected gasoline. Moreover, after being contacted by Enterprise, the couple contacted the gas station to ask whether a screw-up was even possible, and they were sent a photo clearly demonstrating that the pump they had used, also documented on the receipt, didn't even have a diesel fuel dispenser. There's no guarantee that what they pumped into their car wasn't actually diesel. Fuel trucks goof that up and are often more often than you might expect. Still, it was enough to demonstrate that the couple hadn't done anything negligent. The fact that they had made it to the airport, at all invites more suspicion of Enterprise's accusation. The station was nearly 25 miles from the airport. If the tank had been half filled with diesel, there would have been signs. On top of that, the Durango is equipped with a fuel filler that would prevent diesel nozzles from fitting. Taken together, this should have convinced Enterprise to drop the claim, right? Nope. Instead, the couple had to go to the media to bring pressure against the rental agency. When pressed to comment on the situation, Enterprise instead dropped the claim. Moral of the story, keep your receipts, or at least take a picture of them. That tiny slip destined for the trash may be worth more than you realize. Wowza, wowza. Other news. From the LA Times. I was happy to see this on my feed. The Arby's sign from Sunset Boulevard location in Hollywood appeared at Stagecoach. A weekend in the desert is a go-to getaway for Southern Californians, even if you're a beloved neon sign. Nearly 2 years after the Hollywood Arby's closed, its cowboy hat shown again this weekend at the Stagecoach Music Festival in Indio. The restored sign showed up more than 130 miles away from its original home as part of the roast beef chain's pop-up at the festival at the Empire Polo Club, where it became one of the event's go-to photo spots. As you can see, everyone's loving it. Everyone's getting a photo op standing in front of it, Arby's franchisee Roger Myra said. Over the 3 years, people have moseyed up to the... Over 3 days, people moseyed up to the pop-up near Diplo's Honky Tonk, sometimes lining up to wait their turn to take a photo in front of the signs. Some climbed on the surrounding hay bales for a better pose, asking others in line to snap their photo in front of the cowboy hat. Embezzled with the words, Arby's roast beef sandwich is delicious. Number of people we talked to taking photos weren't from LA and didn't know the lore of the Hollywood Arby's sign. They just liked the visual. The sign's original location was the Arby's at 5920 Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, which had been open for more than 55 years when it shuttered in June 2024. I remember this location mostly from Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Jerry and Seth Rogen went there, notably. The family that owned the location said at the time the rising food costs, the post-pandemic changes in the neighborhood, and a law that raised minimum wage contributed to the closure. Amaya said that Amir Siddiqui, head of a group of Arby's franchises, was able to get the sign from the Hollywood location and have it restored. We were able to bring it back to life here and bring it to all the fans of Arby's out there. Now that Stagecoach is over, where will the sign go next? That's a big question, so you gotta stay tuned, Amaya said. There was an Arby's around my house in Canoga Park that closed that had the big hat, too. I always wanted one of those signs. I don't know where that one went, though. I thought about swiping it after they closed. I remember, it was completely covered in graffiti, like, within months after it shut down. And then they painted over it brown. And then one day it just disappeared. I think there's still a big hat store in Sepulveda. The next closest Arby's to me is now in Simi Valley, where this happened last year. So there's a duo of TikTokers called the Arby's Boys that throw raves at Arby's. I like Arby's. I don't eat there enough. Clearly, because it took me a year to notice mine closed. But back in Chicago, getting a pack of mozzarella sticks to eat on the train saved me so many times. Or curly fries. The 1996 Caprice is back. A couple weeks ago, I was very distraught at losing that auction for about $2,000 more than I was willing to pay. But whoever won it either didn't pay or they didn't have a dealer's license, because coming up in May... second chance. Another old cop car I was bidding on recently was the 1963 Dodge 880 on Bring a Trailer. This here's a good one from the listing. This 1963 Dodge 880 four-door sedan is a running project that's said to have been used by the California Highway Patrol until mid-1965, when it was purchased by a World War II veteran who drove the car regularly through the 1980s. And retained the vehicle until his death in 2016. The Fort 13 V8 can be operated via a temporary fuel container, and the seller states that the push-button 3-speed automatic transmission and the brakes allow the Dodge to be driven at low speeds. The seller tells us that the fuel, braking, and cooling systems require work. This Dodge project is now offered at no reserve, within an owner's manual, service manual, partial service record, spare parts, and a clean Washington title in the seller's name. So yeah, you look at the pictures of this thing and it was rough. The front and rear bench seats are trimmed with torn upholstery that exhibits exposed stuffing. The door panels are warped, damaged, or missing. The trunk floor shows corrosion. The breaker plate, spark plugs, and plug wires were replaced in 2017. And a used battery was installed in March 2026. Ooh. The 593 body code on the fender tag indicates the car is a police specification. Dodge 880 four-door sedan. Similarly, the number 9 in the second position of the chassis number equates to a police special vehicle. The car wound up solding for $5,200, which made me happy because it sat at... This is the first car I bid on Bring a Trailer in years since the famous Bell System van. And I threw in a bid at $500 and I was outbid at $1,000. And it sat there for like a week. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to buy this car. Because I think it went up to $1,500, which was about as far as I was going to go. And then it sat there till the last few minutes and I watched it go up and up and up to $5,200. And I was like, good. I don't want to have to go up to Washington and bring back this Heap home. Because I would have. A little article I found from Hemmings on what they called the Dodge Dependables 880 Police Pursuit. Anytime you want to talk about cop cars from the 1960s, you pretty much have to begin and end with the California Highway Patrol. The 1,200 plus cars per year they bought, most of them Chryslers, were built to their specifications, which became the standard nationwide police package. The 880 and custom 880 appeared in the 1962 as a replacement for the late unlamined DeSoto. They were the biggest cars in Dodge's lineup, with a body resembling a 1961 Dodge in the front and 1962 Chryslers from the windshield back. They boasted V8 power across the board. As CHP's E-Class enforcement vehicle, it was actually slower off the line than the 1964 Plymouth Pursuit with the 383, which found favor in many states. But again, that long Dodge wheelbase was just what the trooper ordered for California's endless roads. For highway use, police departments were accustomed to long wheelbase cars. And the RB413 cubic inch V8 was available by special order. While the 413 never appeared in the retail sales brochure, it was still on the dealer order form and in the service manual, so a small number of customer cars reportedly went out the door with it. In a cop car, the 413 was considered the interceptor engine, meaning it was intended specifically for high-speed use. The CHP chose the 880 for 1963 and put together a list of specifications for their cars. The 413 belongs to Chrysler's B family of engines that includes obscure and unpopular variants such as the 383, 400, 426, 426 Hemi, and 440. Appearing in 1958, the B series was an all-new replacement for the original Hemi, which is what I have in my 1956 Plymouth. The original Hemi was well-loved, and the new engines suffered in comparison, but later gave rise to the street Hemi. Some of the things the cop cars were equipped with, they rode on high-speed 760 by 15-inch tires on truck-sourced wheels. The brake pads were bonded rather than riveted. It had a reinforced frame, a full posi sure grip rear end, heavy-duty push bar, full radiator shroud, transmission cooler, battery heat shield, 7-blade fan, extra high-capacity high-pressure radiator, low-restriction air cleaner, high-speed governor with a single 4-barrel carburetor, light and siren wiring harnesses, a Elise Neville alternator, heavy-duty springs in both suspension and the seats. Yeah, cool car. What's interesting, too, if the 413 engine sounds familiar, that was the villain in the Beach Boys song Shut Down, as the song goes. My fuel-injected Stingray in a 413, revving up our engines and it sounds real mean. My Stingray is light, the slicks are starting to spin, but the 413's really digging in. Pedals to the floor, hear the dual quads drink. And now the 413's lead is starting to shrink. He's hot with ram injection, but it's understood. I got a fuel-injected engine sitting under my foot. So, I don't know. I think alone, that car, just for the song reference, well worth it. Another CHP car I say recently was looking at, but it was a year ago already. On Copart, there was a 2002 Chevrolet Camaro with the B4C special service package. Now, this was a CHP car. It wasn't used for regular patrol use, but they would use them for driving demonstrations and training purposes up in Sacramento at their track. I don't remember the exact number. I had all this information, but I lost it in the last year. But I think there was about a dozen of these cars made. They were all 2002 Camaros. They had almost sequential VIN numbers. And they occasionally show up at Barrett Jackson and Mecum and otherwise. But they were equipped with roll cages. This unit somehow made it to Kentucky, complete with flood damage. But otherwise, it was still in service condition. You could still make out the CHP graphics on the door that was peeled off. It was still black and white. It didn't even seem like it was modified that much from the original use. So someone bought it out there. Looks like it was involved in some kind of natural disaster. And I was always told never buy flood cars. But being in Kentucky, it was probably fresh water and not salt water. And I probably never have another chance to buy one of these. So this is my first Copart auction experience before I even bought the LTD. And I bid up. I didn't participate in the actual auction, but I bid it up in the pre-bidding to $1,975. Because the shipping was going to be another $2,000. But had it been closer, I probably would have won it. But I couldn't justify $4,000 for that car and lose it all in shipping. Love me a bitchin' Camaro. A service vehicle I do own that is often a fan favorite is my fire truck. Really, it's a 1995 GMC Suburban that was used by the Los Angeles Fire Department. Started life as the Battalion 1 command vehicle. When it eventually retired in 2022, it was part of the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT, call-out program. And it was through the research I did on the Suburban when I bought it that I found out all about the CERT call-out program and subsequently went through the CERT basic training and worked my way up to being sworn in by the department as a call-out member. And the call-out team handles tasks such as firefighter hydration, relieving engine companies from minor calls like wires down, and a lot of community outreach events. So I have a personal interest in the LAFD, so naturally, a cause that's very important to me is the Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation. So what does the Los Angeles Fire Department Foundation do? Well, the foundation was able to equip every LAFD firefighter with two new pairs of gloves. Thanks to donor support, the LAFD is the first in the nation to add a robotic firefighting vehicle to its fleet. The Adopt a Fire Station program is uniquely designed to improve living and working conditions at all 106 LAFD fire stations across Los Angeles. Thermal imaging cameras were provided by the LAFD Foundation to every single LAFD firefighter, catalyzed by the Los Angeles wildfires that impacted the city in January 2025. Community support for this purchase helped LAFD become the first fire department in the country to provide thermal imaging cameras for every single firefighter. In 2023, the LAFD recognized an increase in calls for emergency medical services. In response, the LAFD Foundation equipped LAFD with two new 24-hour staffed fast response vehicles with the ability to treat patients on site, provide medical referrals, and pump water. These multi-mission resources have relieved other LAFD resources more than 16,000 times. So how does this involve me? Well, once a year, the foundation runs a fundraising contest to determine who will be the new canine mascot of the LAFD. In the past 2 years, I've entered my dog, Lizzie. 1 year was really close. Last year, I didn't do my best, but what I'm asking you to do, go to drivelineshow.com, click on the link that says Vote for Lizzie, LAFD Holland Heroes Calendar Contest, and make a donation using that platform. Every dollar donated is one vote for Lizzie to be in the 2027 LAFD calendar, and that'll get us on KTLA, get to be on the field at Dodger Stadium, and lots of other public appearances, and a month in the calendar. So if anything, donate thinking of me on TV and how much fun that'll be for you to see. Talking to you, Klein Alley Show Netbangers. My fundraising goal is $2,000, but if Team Driveline can do more, it'd be fantastic. Contest is running now until May 15th. And remember, every dollar raised supports the LAFD Foundation in purchasing critical equipment that the city's budget does not cover. Without community support, firefighters would lack resources to mental health, advanced medical equipment, and the life-saving technology they need to keep Los Angeles safe. DriveLineShow.com and click Vote for Lizzie. That's all I got for this week. Get those donations in. May is jam-packed with guests. Vic will be on to talk more about his recovered stolen Camaro. Trying to get the Phantom on a call here. It'll be busy. Instagram and TikTok at driveline.show. Voicemail 24/7 at 833-3DL-SHOW. Talk to you later. Bye-bye now. Yay! Don't, don't, 驚き情熱価格. Yeah, boy! Don't, don't, 驚き情熱価格. Come on!